Welcome to LifeQuest, a program that directs you to subjects and books that will make a difference in your life. A program that will make you think and strengthen your journey of faith in the 21st century. I'm Dwight Lainhoff, and today I'm speaking with John Brunt. Now, he's an author, a college professor, and a pastor at the Azure Hills Church in Southern California. John, welcome to LifeQuest.
Well, thank you, Dwight. Nice to be here.
We're wanting to talk about your book today, which is called How to Survive Armageddon. And when I go to a bookstore, it doesn't necessarily even have to be a Christian bookstore, I find shelves and shelves of books on all kinds of ideas about the last days, the end times. And does this fit in somewhere in there?
Well, part of the reason for writing the book is because there's so much today. There's a lot of interest, but there's an awful lot of just unbiblical, I think, and wrong ideas out there as well. So I wanted to help try to set the record straight and maybe contribute something to the discussion.
Where do you think some of these ideas come from if they're not coming from the Bible?
Well, I think that the whole dispensationalist approach has come from a certain stream of Christianity that has interpreted the Bible in a certain way.
Okay.
But I don't think that on close scrutiny it really ends up being what the Bible teaches.
Well, we're so glad that you're here to straighten us out.
And well, I'm not sure I'll straighten you out. Maybe you can help straighten me out. But,
but it is a subject of great interest. And we're going to look at some of the things that you've talked about and some surprising things that we've maybe even taken for granted that we were pretty sure were in some of the what seems to be the most important books of Last Day Event, which is the book of Revelation.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there are a lot of people, even non-believers, who are concerned about where our world is going and what does it mean?
Well, I think that that's a pretty understandable concern when you look at the events of the world today, isn't it? We live in a very different world. You know, in Matthew 24, Jesus says that when he comes, if God didn't cut the time short, mm-hmm. humans would destroy themselves completely, or all flesh would be destroyed. You know, through most of the history of the world, that seemed like a ludicrous idea, didn't it?
It did.
You could do a lot of damage with a bit of gunpowder or with a bow and an arrow, but you certainly couldn't destroy the world.
Mm-hmm.
Today, we have that ability. And when you look at the history of humankind and the cruelty that has happened, it's hard to believe that we would show perfect restraint in the use of these powers that we now have.
And some of the conflicts and some of the issues that have become so much a part of our history also seem to be done with some kind of religious motivation or some kind of background in that.
Absolutely. And a lot of horrific things that have been done with religious motivation.
I lived in Northern Ireland for a number of years, and so I experienced some of that. Now, Jesus did talk about end times, and when he left, he said to his friends, I'm going to be coming back, and in essence, to sort this all out.
Mm-hmm. I think that one of the most interesting passages is when he actually is ascending to heaven after the resurrection, as recorded in Acts chapter 1. And when you look at that chapter, the disciples are expecting something right then. They say, is this the time you're going to restore the kingdom? Is this the time you're going to bring it all to an end? And Jesus says a couple of very interesting things. He says, it's not for you to know the times and the seasons. Now, interestingly, we have not gotten that message clearly always. We have been setting times, various Christian groups, in fact, you know, it's even been on the news in the last few months,
yes.
Groups that have set times when Jesus was going to come. I had, about a year ago, we kept track, the pastoral staff here, And over the course of a year, we had 8 different people come in and try to want to talk to the pastoral staff and see if they could convince us that they knew the date when Jesus was going to come. Now, we didn't give them much time and didn't get the whole staff together, but when they handed us materials and so forth, they were all different dates, but 8 people who were quite sure they knew when Jesus was going to come. Jesus says, it's not for you to know. And what he goes on to do is call them to be witnesses. So our job is not to try to figure out the time of the second coming, but to be witnesses of Jesus. And then I think another interesting thing about that passage is that when Jesus ascends to heaven and the 2 men dressed in white meet with the disciples, they say, this same Jesus is going to come back in the same way you've seen him go. This same Jesus. I think that when you look at the apocalyptic material that's out there today, many times the scenarios aren't really about the same Jesus. And if we read the Gospels and we understand who Jesus is, this is the same one who's coming back, the Jesus who was willing to die for us, the Jesus who had such compassion and healed people and presented the Sermon on the Mount. That's the same Jesus that's coming back. It seems to me a lot of the apocalyptic speculation that we have today is about scary things that kind of create fear in people and make them worry about what's coming, where I think the biblical emphasis is exactly the opposite. It is the future is in the hands of this same Jesus that we have learned about in the Gospels and who has saved us by his grace and who makes such beautiful promises to us that he's going and preparing a place for us and will come again. And so I think the emphasis needs to be on Jesus and the same Jesus that we find in the Gospels. And so often today it seems that the emphasis is on a lot of scary events and antichrists and various things that are going to happen instead of on this same Jesus.
Sometimes people seem to be sign watchers instead of Christ watchers.
That's right, exactly.
I want to go back to something you said just a moment ago, John, and that is that people come in, they write books, or in your case, they've come to your church staff and want to discuss with you as theologians their ideas about when Jesus comes. What do you think is the motivation? What do they think will happen if people accept their idea that at such and such a date and such a length of time, Christ is going to come?
Well, I'll tell you, it was interesting. Some of these people were very strong in saying, you know, if you don't tell people about this, it's going to be on your heads because people need to make a decision before then. And they need to know that this is the time that they have to make that decision. Well, it seems to me that often the motivation is that kind of intensity, but I would think that we live every day with the necessity for making a decision, maybe not with the kind of frightful intensity that they talk about, but with more the peace of Christ that he offers us through his Spirit. But, you know, every day could be my last. I never know what's going to happen the rest of the day. And so I don't think that the time should be the thing that motivates us. In fact, what motivates us ought to be the love that God has revealed through Christ and the peace and joy that he offers to us.
Rather than I want to escape hellfire or the judgment
right.
or something like that. John, I got to tell you that a number of years ago, I had a man come to me and he said, I've got this information here. And he unrolled a 20-foot scroll that he had together of all the details of things that had to happen before Jesus came. And I thought to myself, all Christ has to do is follow this scroll and he'll know exactly when to come.
And of course, it seems to me that scrolls like that and event charts like that often have the opposite effect because people will kind of say, oh, well, there are these 17 things that have to happen first, so I guess I don't need to worry for a while anyway.
you have a couple of chapters that seem to follow the same theme, chapters 3 and 4 of your book, and which are titled, How Can the Last Days Last So Long, and How Long, O Lord? And I want to ask you about the word soon. Mm-hmm. Jesus is coming soon. I have heard this since I was a child. Historically, Christians have talked about it from the very first century. How elastic should we worry about the word soon?
Well, it's quite clear that in New Testament times they felt it was soon, and it's also true that in New Testament times you get the idea that there were already people then that had problems with soon had been too long for mm-hmm. them. Obviously, soon can't just be a matter of time measurement in the sense that we measure it. Soon being 2,000 years would seem strange, wouldn't it?
Yes.
But in the New Testament, the last days have really already begun with the resurrection of Jesus.
Ah.
When Jesus comes out of the tomb, then already the last days have begun. And Paul in Ephesians can talk about what we have already received through the Spirit as the guarantee or the down payment of the future. So when we think about soon, it's not just a matter of saying, well, something's got to happen out there. As Christians, we believe something already has happened, that in a sense, the end has already begun, and we're living in a different kind of time than before the resurrection of Jesus. So it is the last days. We already begin to experience the down payment, and I think that's what these scenarios often forget, is that the present, the already, is supposed to be the guarantee, the down payment, the assurance that what is coming is coming. Even if it seems like it's longer than we would have expected,
mm-hmm.
obviously God's time is his time, and Jesus told us he didn't even know the time. It was only the Father knew. So we have to respect God's time, which is not our time. But we also have to realize that something has already happened. We're supposed to be experiencing that new life now. In John 5, Jesus says that the time is coming and now is when people will pass from death to life. And then he says, and the time is coming when the graves will open and people will be resurrected. And so that resurrection is in two phases. There's already a new life that begins, an eternal life that begins now, and that should keep us from despair about the future, because we've already tasted the songs of the kingdom when we live for Jesus now.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Life Quest. It's a program about books. My name is Dwight Lainhoff, and I'm talking with John Brunt. It's about his book, How to Survive Armageddon. There is a concern, or Jesus gave, maybe you could even call it a warning, about deception. As I've read the books of the New, the letters of the New Testament, there was a warning by the writers, Paul and James and others, about false teachers that would come mm-hmm. in. And in chapter 6 of your book, How to Survive Armageddon, John, you say, you remind us that Jesus was concerned that even those who are going to be saved might be deceived.
That's right. He is very concerned. In fact, if you just listen to Mark 13 and the parallel in Matthew 24, Jesus' main concern is that his people will be deceived. Some of those deceptions will presume that people claim to be Christ. Of course, in Jesus' own day, there were a lot of people who came along and claimed to be the Messiah.
Mm-hmm.
And he says that that's going to happen again, that there will be people who claim to be the Messiah. Now, every now and then, we see people that most would consider kooks claiming to be Christ, and
yes.
nobody pays much attention to them. But he seems to suggest that there will be people who give rather convincing performances in claiming to be him, and he gives us some guidelines. Gives us the guideline that when he comes, it's going to be like lightning from the east to the west, and everyone's going to see him. So we should know that if anybody says, hey, Christ is over here, you need to come out and meet with him, We know that that's false. We know that that's a deception because Jesus is very clear about it.
Yeah, there are some people, there were some in the first century, but there's some people now that are afraid they're going to miss it somehow, that it'll be a secret event and all of a sudden they're left behind.
That's right. And I don't see that in any of the passages in the New Testament. It seems to me that in each one, there is a trumpet sound, there's a call of the archangel, Jesus comes visibly, everyone sees him, it's like lightning from the east to the west, and often people divide up these passages and we'll see some of them, like 1 Thessalonians 4 is referring to a secret event that's going to happen before the actual second coming, mm-hmm. and yet in every one of those passages you get the same kind of language, which leads me to believe that they're all talking about the same event, which is the second coming of Christ that will be visible to all.
Mm-hmm. When anybody studies the book of Revelation or talks about last day events, they all of a sudden start talking about the Antichrist in a very fearful way.
Mm-hmm.
And you suggest that, in fact, the word Antichrist isn't even in the book of Revelation.
Yes, isn't that a surprise? A lot of people are surprised at that because you think of Revelation being all about the Antichrist, but the word never occurs there. In fact, the only places where it does occur is in the letters of John. And there, he actually says that many Antichrists have already come.
And that was in the first century.
And that was in the first century. So Antichrist is not necessarily just one figure who comes at the end, as we usually think, but apparently anyone who comes along and fits the criteria, and for those letters of John, the criterion seems to be that they deny who Christ really is. In other words, they become Antichrist in that they try to set something else in the place of Christ. And apparently there were already people doing that in the first century, and I would find it surprising if people didn't continue to try to do that if they started it already in the first century.
Pastor Brunt, when we talk about these events and the signs of Christ's coming and the changes that sometimes we're quite fearful of in the world, and sometimes we're even overwhelmed by the technology in the world about us,
mm-hmm.
That has been brought into a discussion of something called the mark of the beast. And people worry about that there's some kind of scanning code that's going to be tattooed on your body or something like that. You're saying
it seems to me that in Revelation 14, 13 and 14 together, John is talking about spiritual issues.
Oh, okay.
He's talking not about some kind of technological device that might fool us, but he's talking about the basic issues of who we give our allegiance and who we give our worship to. Whether we worship God, the one who created everything, whether we give our allegiance to him, or whether we give our allegiance to a different power that would use force rather than love to try and compel people in the world. And I think that when you look at Revelation 12, it's very clear that Satan is behind these powers
mm-hmm.
that would use force and try to compel people. And I think that the basic choice has always been the same, the choice of Christ's kingdom of love and grace, a kingdom where self-sacrifice and generosity hold sway, or a kingdom of this world where status and power and greed hold sway. And I think the issue is between those two basic kingdoms, Satan's kingdom and God's kingdom. And so I'm not worried about whether some little device is going to be the mark of the beast. I think that it's a clear spiritual issue that if we read in context Revelation 12 through 14, we see that every generation confronts the choice of what kind of kingdom we're going to follow.
And the word that you keep repeating that makes a lot of sense to me is allegiance. Are you making a choice?
Mm-hmm.
The concern that sometimes comes about persecution of there were plagues mentioned in Egypt and now in the book of Genesis and now they seem to be repeated in the last book of the Bible. What do you think that means in terms of our world and the times in which we're living?
Oh, I think that Revelation does picture a time before the second coming when things are very bad in the world and when these plagues come. But you notice, when you read in context the book of Revelation, there's a song before the plagues come, a hymn. A lot of people forget about the hymns in the book of Revelation. We think of Revelation as just symbols about the end.
Mm-hmm.
But there are all these hymns in Revelation that kind of point to who God really is. And before the plagues, we have this hymn about God's fairness and justice and what happens in the world will demonstrate that God is the one who has been fair and gracious all the time. And he's still going to be with his people during those times. Certainly, there may be times when Christians face terrible persecution and even lose their lives. I know of people who in other parts of the world have had relatives who lost their lives because of their Christian faith. But Christ gives us the assurance that even if that should happen, he is with us. And this life is not the end. We have the hope of eternal life with him. So I don't think we need to sit around and fear persecution. Most of the disciples, you know, lost their lives for their allegiance to Christ. And I don't think we should consider ourselves somehow immune and superior to them. It's possible that persecution can come, but that's not where the focus is. The focus is that after this trouble happens on the world, everyone will admit that what Christ has done has been motivated by love in every way, and he's done everything he can to save as many people as he possibly can, as would be willing to live in the kind of kingdom that he's creating for eternity.
You actually suggest in chapter 11 of your book, How to Survive Armageddon, that God's judgment is actually good news.
Absolutely. When you look at the world and you see horrible things happening, wouldn't you much rather have justice than have just anarchy? We clamor for that in this world, don't we? When something happens, when there's an injustice, and I think that God's character would be in great question if he simply allowed an anarchy to go on forever, where there was no kind of justice or fairness. And so judgment is good news. It says there is fairness.
We've been hearing the good news about the last days from John Brunt. He has written a book called How to Survive Armageddon. John, I understand this book is available at Amazon.com.
Yes, it is.
And other places?
ABC bookstores have it, I know.
It's published by the Review and Herald Publishing Association. Thank you, Pastor Brunt, for being with us today on LifeQuest. Thanks for listening to LifeQuest today. If you have questions or comments, you may send them to lifequest@lifetalk.net or write to LifeQuest at P.O. Box 33082, Knoxville, Tennessee 37930.